Okay. Great. So thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Brian Standen, who's agreed to be interviewed, particularly as it is, what, 6 p.m. in Germany now? So we're cutting into dinner time, maybe an evening walk with our transitional jacket on.
Yeah, that's right.
So Brian is Global Head of Digital Innovation at BASF, and I'm Lee Green, and I run IRISE Research and Strategic Initiatives. And this interview is an element of IRISE Digitalization Community. And the DXC is a grouping of organizations that are on the journey towards digital integration. And through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content, facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We'll be having one tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern, and we'll touch on some of the things discussed here. I also send out updates with additional insights and resources and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the third Thursday of the month at noon Eastern, and I'll have details of next month's interview shortly. I'm just pinning down the person now. I shouldn't say that, should I? I'm definitely pinning them down. And I'll be sure to sign all of you up for updates if you aren't already on the mailing list. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Brian. So first, the session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. And I will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can either raise your hand and you can unmute yourself and have a conversation with Brian, or you can type your question in and into the chat, and I'll read it out for you, whatever you prefer. All right, boring stuff out of the way. Thank you so much, Brian. So let's go ahead and get started. Can you tell us about your background, about BASF, and where you sit in the organization?
Yeah, sure. So first off, thank you for having me. I've always felt very close to the mission with IRI, and I think you guys do good work, and I'm always happy to contribute and give back. So thank you for that, and also thank you for to everybody who came to hear this. By background, I have a degree in anthropology and English, and I have an MBA. I've been working for BASF for the last 10 years. When I came into the organization, I was focused more on computational biology, although that wasn't my background. My history prior to that has really been everything related to IT and digital in any way, shape, or form. I'd done both hardware and programming, owned a small startup at one point in time, which I sold my way out of, and then started a consulting firm, worked for a not-for-profit. So I've really had experiences in a lot of domains across the industry. But in BASF, we are, I think, the world's largest chemical company still. We're about 112,000 people, and I work in what's called global digital services. And I have a role that is, I think maybe for some of the bigger companies out there, you may know this, or even maybe in some of the small ones, I'm staffed to a senior vice president within a specific part of global digital services, which is primarily focused on digitalization of R&D. But my role, this is sort of where I'm parked, but my role is across our division of global digital services. And my whole intent is to be keeping an eye on the future and what radical innovation can look like for us. I don't tend to deal in things that are a little bit more incremental innovation. I tend to really look for what's the next big thing that could be coming our way, and how will it have impact for BASF.
Awesome. So in this role, so you're looking at what comes next for digital transformation. So what does that actually mean in practice?
So in practice, what we do is we have a series of investments, right? And the best way to think about this, if I'm honest with you, is that we treat it very much like a VC. And what we have is an organization of investments into key digital technologies that we're interested in. And once we've sort of discovered this, we'll bring it into what's called our Digital Innovation Board, and a pitch is made in order to determine whether this should actually become one of the investments we do or not. And we can talk a little bit about how we build a pipeline of incoming new ideas as we go. But the process is really you're pitching just like a startup would pitch, and in many ways, I treat these investments as internal startups. And so a team of people have noticed that there's some really interesting technology out there that we should be paying attention to, believe that we can develop some capability around it over the next few years that we could then sort of release into the operational organization in order for them to benefit from. And they come in and they pitch it to the Digital Innovation Board. And we then vote to determine whether we think this should move forward or not. And we try to keep this relatively simple. It's kind of a yes, no, or maybe approach. And we do it immediately. So once you've done the pitch, you will know by the end of that meeting whether you've actually been accepted to become part of the portfolio or whether you need to come back or whether it's a hard no. And that's on purpose, right? This is meant to be entrepreneurial. This is meant to be something that we try to encourage people to be dynamic and as much as possible try to take an 80-20 approach, right? And understand that if we're talking about new innovations, right, we can't necessarily know everything up front. So we can't have the best project plan. We cannot have everything dialed in by the time the pitch is made. But do we see enough that we think we can actually reap some benefit out of this? Now, it doesn't stop there. So every one of the investments is then held to a review once a year. And in that review, it's very much like the pitch. It's either you're going to continue, you're going to be discontinued, or you're ready to actually take what you've developed and put it into the operational organization. So that's really, it's intended to put some pressure on these startups, if you will, or these investments, so that they know that each year you can't necessarily guarantee that you have the budget to continue. Now, you could also say maybe we're shortchanging those investments a little bit, but from what I've seen in practice, that hasn't been the case. It's really about, are you making progress against what you said you would do? And are you starting to deliver? And is it really developing in a way that we think it can be still beneficial? And that's a good thing. And then when we've made the hard decisions where we've had to stop something, which we do, and that's one of the things I love about the portfolio management here, we'll stop things. It's generally because either the demand for it has dried up or the technology maybe is not going to come to fruition, or, you know, maybe it's right technology, wrong time. There's a number of reasons, but so far we've been actually, I think, pretty diligent about that.
Okay. There is a lot to unpack there, and it's all very exciting. So let's start at the beginning. So where are you looking for these, you know, new technologies, weak signals, that sort of thing?
So as part of this, what I do, there's a scouting arm of this. It's not, it's a community across across my division, but also incorporating the businesses and other people in BASF to help look for new opportunities, because probably the least scalable element of what we do is the person factor, because we can only scale so much. So instead of scaling up, we scale out and try to bring people to the table to help us with that. So that's one way. I think, like everybody else, we have connections to analysts. And so we're also listening and hearing what they have to say. But 90% of what I do is just constant and continual reading on new technologies and finding those sources of information out in the world that I think can help accelerate that for me. I think one of the other parts of it is sourcing these new ideas is conversations with people. Again, terribly analog, but what's fascinating to me is the number of conversations that I'll have here that will start out with, well, what we do isn't very innovative. And maybe even the intent of the conversation wasn't even to talk about innovation, but as we talk about what somebody does or where they're headed, there's opportunity in there. And so part of what I see my job as is to hear what people are saying and then to challenge them about whether they really are doing something more innovative than they think, or maybe what they're doing in combination with something else that I know of that's happening in the organization could potentially be innovative. So sometimes it's actually institutional and organizational knowledge to bring together to kind of create that. My favorites, though, are the people who come to me and they say, I have this really interesting idea. You know, can we talk about it? Because these are the people that I think not only have an idea, but they've now taken that next step to actually want to execute on that idea, want to validate it and find out if there's some legs for it. That's great for me. I mean, and certainly it makes my job easier if the entrepreneurs are coming to me instead of me having to go find them. But oftentimes it's both.
Okay. And that's from inside the organization you're looking and outside as well, right?
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. And can you share an example of something that you've seen recently that was interesting?
Well, as boring as it's going to be to everybody, because it's the only technology topic that anybody ever seems to want to engage me on anymore, is generative AI has been the biggest and most talked about thing for the past year now. We were a little bit ahead of the curve. So we actually had already started in on generative AI prior to the explosion that happened at the end of November last year. But I don't know that I could honestly say that we foresaw how big and how pervasive ChatGPT would start to become. So this is something that's happening, and it's not generative AI itself. I mean, clearly we can all read about that. And when you realize it reaches like USA Today, which I just saw an article in, or the Today Show, I got an article from just recently, that's pretty well known. So nothing was serious there, but it's that plugged me into communities that I maybe didn't know about prior, where the next generation of what generative AI offers is starting to come to light. And that would be something like agents, if you're not familiar with, but this is more autonomous bots in a way that actually leverage the large language model to execute tasks wholly on their own. Very promising and interesting technology. And I've already seen now the first iteration of this. I think the first time I started reading about it was sort of March, April. And in that same few months after that, a sort of competitor came out to that. And this is competition and open source. And so it's fascinating because you can see the dynamics are already happening, but they're happening at a speed that is just absolutely breathtaking. So I would say it's probably agents.
Okay. So how do you sift through all of these ideas to figure out, you know, how to actually get to the point where they're doing pitches for you?
Yeah. For me, it comes back to this conversation. I like people to kind of pre-pitch to me a little bit to see if they have an idea that we haven't really considered before. What we're very careful about is that what we're doing in my program is not meant to be an alternative for funding like another version of some software that we already have, right? Mm-hmm. That's incremental innovation, that's elsewhere. So that's why it's partly a conversation. But the way that I've started to scale this is I've introduced a pre-pitch round that I refer to as seed funding, just continuing the analogy of startups and VCs. Here, people actually answer a form. I try to make it very easy for them to get to, and then I'm notified and read through it and see if I see the potential for them to actually prove out what they're now pitching to me. So I would fund a small, fast proof of value that feeds into their pitch to make their pitch better when they come out. And so that's now my sifting mechanism, if you will, to have people come to bring those good ideas to me.
Okay. All right. And then, so tell us about this executive board that's making these decisions. You know, who sits on it? How often are you meeting? What does it look like?
We meet a few times a year, a little more than quarterly. And the team is actually represented by people across BASF. So it's not just my division as Global Digital Services, but we actually pull in from other divisions as well, from the businesses, from other functional and service units within BASF. And that board then helps with determining what makes the most sense to invest in as a team. We typically will take on new pitches, but we're also doing the reviews. That's the operational aspect of it. And then also a lot of external outside in content being shared within this board to kind of digest and consider and inform for where we maybe some of that next technology lies. So that's one element I didn't really talk about, is that this board also digests some of this content that I will bring to them to also help us in deciding on what might be an interesting next step.
Okay. And so once the board kind of makes the decision, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, you know, what's the process? You know, how do you you know, invest in the technology? What kind of support do they get?
So it's, we break down the barrier for funding. So they, the funding actually takes us, believe it or not, less than a month, and usually faster than that to get to them. Where the challenge then lies is I think the it's the deer in the headlights syndrome afterward, because so much effort went into the pitch that when they hear me tell them they've been accepted, and then the second thing out of my mouth after saying that you've been approved is, now get going now, today, right? I just told you, so you need to move now. But that's that constant sense of urgency that I want to build behind what we're trying to do, because we don't know how these technologies will develop, so we have to move fast. But yeah, so we've broken down a lot of the barriers to getting to the funding. What they will often do then is start to form or build on a community, because they need to start leveraging the organization. One of the things that we really want to see from these investments is that, given that it's new technology, you need to upskill the organization in this type of technology. So that's also falling within the responsibility of the investment, as well as then starting out who you're going to pull in, how are you going to execute against the plan that you've shown. And so that really starts from the moment we tell you have the money to go. And, you know, for anybody else in a multinational, we all know that the hardest part is procurement and legal and all those pieces. So that's another reason to essentially say, get started now, because those processes will take time and you don't want to find that 6 months down the road, when you have only 6 months left to your review, that you are behind because of those types of processes. So we're working on streamlining that. I'm doing my best in that part, but there's a lot of organizational inertia pushing against me on that part. So, but I think that it's really about breaking down the barriers and getting started. And as I was saying with the sort of deer in the headlights analogy, people they're not prepared for that next step. Because they've invested so much in the pitch, and to sort of hear that they're expected to keep to go right then is always a little shocking. But and I actually led an investment as a side. I led an investment in quantum computing, and I felt the same way. I was shocked that it worked, that I got the money, and that now all of a sudden I had to figure out how I was going to execute against the things that I said, because I wasn't planning that part. So I very, very much understand where they're coming from, and I can help them with that. But that's sort of that next step.
Okay. So what happens if something, you know, gets green-lighted all the way through and it's working well? Like, how do you bring it in? How do you incubate it? How's that working? And then we'll talk about the not so good on the other side.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. If in an ideal situation, what it would do is it would either have created capabilities that we would push out into existing offerings within the division. So to give you an example, let's say it's a new machine learning capability, and we want to push that into an existing unit that does this type of, that can benefit from this type of capability for marketing and sales, then we would probably place it there, right? But a lot of the capabilities will often have more broad application as we've built them out, and therefore may actually exist on their own, enabling potentially the offerings already in the division. So sort of a layer behind to push, or it could be a complete offer out on its own. So to kind of make that sound a little more tangible, 5G is something that we invested in. I think that makes sense, what we would do, but that would go out into the organization now as its own offer, along with our overall wireless offerings that people can then take advantage of if they want to put it, say, into a production site, just as an example. So that could actually work there, or in other places where 5G could be advantageous because maybe it's a little more remote or has a good fit to the case. So it becomes what we would call operationalized and then offered out. That would be the ultimate satisfying goal of this capability building.
Okay. All right. And so if something is struggling and you don't think it's a good bet, it just gets the thumbs down and then basically it's out.
So as quickly as we start things up, we also like to quickly tie them off if we have to. So that could create some potential unsettling, what's the word I'm looking for? I would say it maybe creates some hesitation sometimes on our leaders about what they might invest in, because perhaps it's a multi-year approach, or, you know, it's possible that somehow the budget would stop in the middle of doing something. So we're very aware of this, and we don't want people to back away from being able to try these types of things. So if there's a multi-year commitment in place, for example, we'll continue the commitment and get to the end and tie it off, but we would try to reduce as many of the other things as we can. So it's really to try and close down the effort and the operations and to release those people back to the organization so that they can also be fruitful in other ways if they're not necessarily going to be able to continue to do and build on this investment. So it really is try to close it out as quickly as possible. Now, the best way to end things would be to do exactly what I said at the beginning, right? The successful way where we push the capabilities out into the organization, and then that brings it to its very natural conclusion. It's also feasible that we see pieces of it go out and other pieces shut down. So that also can be very a very good exit. And we've had even ones that have pushed things out, closed things down, and decided to try and spin out a new investment, which falls right back into the same process. Here, you can't, even though you've already been an investment, you can't just sort of create an adjacency and say, go. It's, you can find this adjacency, but then it has to repitch. So very, very much in this model of everybody has to pitch their idea to get their funding before they go. So I think there's a lot of potential exits that don't have to mean this is over entirely, or that it was a negative end to the road, but rather we can hopefully still find, reap some benefit out of what was done in the meantime.
Okay. All right. So how do you get buy-in from, you know, the relevant parts of the organization for all of this stuff? They might feel like, okay, there's always something new coming at me. How do you get people involved?
Involved in doing pitches, or more involved in supporting those existing investments, or both?
I think both.
Yeah. So the interesting part about new pitches is so far it's been really organic. The people who recognize that there's new technology that they want to embrace then go kind of look for a way to realize that. And again, those are the easy cases for me, because those entrepreneurial people are already out there trying to figure that out. So that's a little bit easier. Sometimes it's about finding a technology, and then I need to find a person behind it. I did try this with something like NFTs, for example. And what I discovered was there was this whole sort of unadvertised community of people that were just enthusiasts on all things related to Web3. That was out there that I plugged into that I didn't even know existed. And so sometimes the technology led me to the people just by starting to ask questions of the organization and say, hey, do you know anybody who's interested in this? I think we could use somebody to kind of run with this and help us make it go. So that's another way that I think we get buy-in from the organization, because sometimes it's actually us coming to them. Certainly a lot of the younger colleagues that I have are pushing the envelope on these technologies for us, which is great. And they're asking the important question of why is it we're not doing this, which I also really appreciate. The buy-in across the organization, I think this is really where the Digital Innovation Board comes into play. You know, we're purposely structured so that it's not siloed within Global Digital Services. You know, our push is to make sure that we show and we do allow for the voice of other parts of BSF to really help in shaping what this portfolio looks like. And I think that's the key to where buy-in happens, right? Because while we're building communities and we bring people together so that they can help us in determining where a technology might fit to a use case, or in the case of Gen AI, which it's already flipped, we don't have to bring the technology to people with use cases. They're bringing the use cases to us without even having to say anything anymore. It's also good to show the credibility behind the decision making, to give that that ultimate buy-in from other people. And then maybe the third thing that I just thought of as I was talking through this is I do a lot of marketing. This is where my MBA really comes in to play and helps me a lot, because I spend a lot of time talking about this program. But again, in a company of so many people, you have to keep saying this message, and you have to keep saying it over and over again, and you have to keep finding new places to say the message, because it's hard to hear it in a big organization. And we certainly use internal marketing that we have through reporting of news in the organization or within a specific division, where we can show success stories, early success stories out of some of these investments, or just the fact that we exist. Sometimes that's enough to get a division to publish something about us, because they don't necessarily always know that they can take advantage of that. So that's, I think, another big piece. And then, sorry, I just thought of a fourth one, is helping our leaders of these investments really be able to speak to the businesses about the value of what they're doing. If they come in and just talk about the technology, that's usually where we start to lose people. It's really about the technology as it applies, and you have to do some research and preparation for those areas of the business that maybe you don't know that have now knocked on your door or that you're trying to make entry into. Here we can find advocates within a lot of the divisions because maybe they're interested in it. Again, we can utilize this digital innovation board to help us as entryway into some of those things, to help us in talking with those organizations and helping them to buy into our effort. And we really want people to participate. So when we go out to those organizations, because within the investment, they're trying a number of different things to build the capability around the general technology. They need people to participate in that. So through that community and through the offer to help try this out with us, I think those people will join up. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what have you learned through this whole process? How does that translate into recommendations for others as they're doing this?
I think that as always, innovation can be difficult, and it can be difficult for people to grasp onto, because even if you put out a definition of what you believe digital innovation to be, there's always an exception to that. And that gray area is often tough for people. They don't like to want to live in gray, non-definitive terms. Unfortunately, I think that's actually what we face in the world around us for the next 30, 40 years, 50 years, maybe longer. So I think that actually is a skill we have to develop. But I've learned that people often see what they do as not being so innovative. I think sometimes what we create in organizations is a very fine-tuned machine to deliver a product, to deliver capabilities out to people. And regrettably, people don't see that what they're doing sometimes on a day-to-day basis is actually innovative, even if it's on the incremental side, right? But then to have somebody who can advocate for them and to help them to extrapolate on those things, I think is missing from a lot of organizations. So I think that's something that I've learned, that innovation can be very hard. I've also, I think, learned that on the flip side of that, when you start to engage people on that, you actually find that there's more people who want to be involved in it, even if they don't fully understand it, because at least in our company, there's not a lot like this that we do. And so when people see that they could potentially have the freedom to explore an idea and execute on it, it's like a light bulb goes off and they say, oh, I didn't know I could do something like that. And that's really the way I like to get people engaged, is that here's an opportunity to make potentially significant impact for the company in a way that we haven't done before. And so I think helping people to see that they have this opportunity is probably one of the biggest learnings I've had over the past, I guess it's coming up on 2 years now since I've been leading this.
Okay. All right, so the questions are already rolling in. And the first one, we might need a little bit more color around this one. So Kevin, jump in if we're stumped here. So any safeguards to prevent other funding sources for ideas, i.e. shadow IT activity? And I'm wondering if that's to do with...
Yeah, I can handle it.
Oh,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and this is really interesting to me. I think one of the challenges we find in the digital space is across our manufacturing plants and other places is there's many ideas. It's more challenging to coordinate those ideas in ways that let us create value across the enterprise. And so I love the idea of kind of having the seed funding that says, okay, that gives us some oversight, but are there other alternative ways that they potentially get funding and next thing you know, they're launching ideas that aren't well coordinated and now could be distracting to the enterprise?
Yeah.
So do you have safeguards that you put in place to manage that?
So it's an interesting thing. That's a great question. There are not safeguards that come out of my organization per se. Let me rephrase that. There are safeguards that come out of my division, my organization as a whole that prevent that because starting up anything from an IT perspective requires a sort of commitment and path through a commission in order to start those projects. From my perspective, on the innovation side, what I do when I hear about these things is I engage those people immediately. And offer to help them if I see something that could be interesting. So I try to make I try to turn it. So it's not that they have to do it because they can't get what they want or something, but rather if they engage with me, we can actually potentially get what you want and it falls into the process of how we want to do innovation. So that's I try to engage directly with those people. Does that mean I miss certain opportunities? Yes, absolutely, of course. There might be people out there trying to do these things in some business in a corner of the company that I don't know about. But that's also a lot of the reason why I create such a big network in the company, because what ends up happening more and more, especially because of the positive nature of what we're doing, where maybe we can fund that with you approach, is that people will say, you know, you really should talk to Brian. You should go to the KDC program for this type of work. And so I ended up benefiting from this word of mouth and from this network creation that I have luckily been able to establish. And also I build off of what my predecessor did before me because he also had some of that network as well. And then I had mine on. So it's a little bit less formal from my perspective. But certainly formal from the division's perspective to prevent shadow IT, because you can't, it's hard for a division to just start up a project on their own.
I hope that answers your question, Kevin.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks. Thanks, Brian.
Right. You bet.
All right, so the next one is, would you recommend both for an organization, standalone innovation groups and injection of innovation-focused individuals into traditional groups? Would both approaches generate effective results and continuous improvement?
So maybe one thing I would say is, and I might have given the wrong impression here, is the program exists on its own, but the people in the investments are not separated from their organization. So they're already those entrepreneurs that are invested in the organization. We pull them from the organization. We don't put them into a new organization, but rather a virtual organization where we work together, but there may still be some responsibility back to their day jobs. There's pros and cons to that, which we could always get into. But I think one of the biggest pros is that it keeps them in touch with the organization and the movement of the organization. And more so to your second point, I think that's also how we get traction for this kind of networking and this fundamental understanding of how to be innovative, right? As I was pointing out at the end, I was surprised by how many people didn't think what they did was innovative when they actually were. But if you have that person embedded within some of our units, then you actually get to see that that person's innovative and this is what they're doing and this is what an entrepreneur may look like. So maybe I can do that as well. So in broad strokes, I 100% agree with your comment. You do need both. I think you have to really watch the first one, because what you don't want to create is ivory tower, where innovation happens over here. It's not here. What I really want is to try and create this sort of horizontal belief that innovation is in all parts of the organization.
Okay, thank you. So, all right, Ami submitted a few. So Ami, jump in if I miss anything here. So the first one is, have you had more success in productivity or growth?
Excellent question. Something we're actually still trying to explore here. I think I would say probably the ones that I'm thinking about graduating now probably have been focused mostly on productivity. Those are the current ones, but the growth ones maybe are taking a little bit longer as we incubate them out. So I do see more growth coming our way. But I think right now the lower hanging fruit has been productivity. That being said, I think one of the other challenges is that it also depends on the maturity of the technology. In some cases, for example, like quantum, it's just not ready. And we couldn't do anything truly useful with it now. But what we've done, for example, is pivoted back a little bit and started to explore annealing, which for those of you who know is a more near-term potential opportunity to leverage quantum-esque approaches. So I think those investments have the freedom to pivot and look at where value will lie eventually in their technology. But we also want to establish a clear understanding that sometimes these things will take some time for us to get there. And we want to give that the freedom to get there, because if you demand ROI too soon, I think we'll just kill it. But it depends on the technology. Gen AI, I before November 30th, 2022, I would have told you is still kind of finding its way. And then after November 30th, 2022, I'd say it's a technology that's here today, right? So that was a big pivot that we had to do with that investment.
All right. And so his next question was, do you measure value versus cost of the overall initiative? And how do you do that?
There's a number of ways that we start to measure value. Sometimes it's less tangible, but we've had some success stories already with some of the newer cutting edge technology, which solved a problem sooner than we had expected. And that was actually intangible euros that we could actually demonstrate. So in some cases we have that. It's not in every case. And going back to what I just said in my prior response, we want to give these things time to incubate and to grow out. And part of that review process is it incubating too long? Do we really need to start seeing it generate value now? Is it a difficult technology that we think will take some more time? That's part of what we're actually asking in terms of questions to get there. So early value can be a struggle, as with any R&D type effort. But I think we try to find ways where maybe there is a low hanging fruit where we can embrace it early if possible, but not at the sacrifice of what we believe is the vision of that investment.
Okay, and I think you've already touched on some of this. So are most of the projects done by a central digital team, or do the resources come from all over the organization? And if it's the latter, we know it's the latter, how do they get freed up from their normal roles?
Yeah, leaders come from within my division. If you're going to lead one of the investments, then you are going to come from this division. But the partnering, right, the application of the technology, the use cases comes from all over the company. So it for me, when done properly, can be a very powerful approach, because we're grounded in the technology here, but we're trying to really source how we use the technology from the people who should know where those use cases lie. And again, that's part of this community building and part of the upskilling that we have to do with the organization.
Okay. And I'm going to skip to Benjamin's question because it's kind of falls on. So who's your typical idea contributor?
You know, this is, I wish I could say who the typical was. I sometimes am surprised by the people who provide ideas. So it's often easy for us to kind of say that it's going to be some of our internal folks here within the division that do this. But I have had approaches from outside of our division, from incubation units or other units within the businesses that are also thinking about digital, that have approached me and said, hey, is there a way that we can perhaps collaborate on something and find a way to build this idea, even if it's very business specific. So oftentimes it comes from outside of, but I guess if I had to put it into a typical idea contributor, it's really probably our, our machine learners, our programmers, the people who are close to the technology here within the division tend to be the ones who submit most of the ideas.
Okay. And so until what point are you involved? And if so, are you using agile methodology? How are you managing all this?
Yeah, I actually, so again, going embracing this idea of an internal startup, I manage the portfolio. My job is to make sure that they are doing the things to help them be successful at what they get, but how they run and manage a project, that's 100% up to them. Now, we are an agile organization, and therefore they should be embracing agile and taking it on within the way that they execute their projects. They should also be thinking entrepreneurially and doing things in parallel and finding alternatives to places where they're getting stuck. And they should be thinking about how they can pivot by what they've learned already in the work that they've done prior. So these are the types of more, that's more at the level that I tend to interact with them. And then I spend a lot of my operational time trying to remove roadblocks that they may encounter in order to kind of move it forward. But I like to see how they organize themselves and how they might actually challenge the way we've organized in the past. So when I built my investment, I did a sort of classic model. I would call it a classic BSF model. If I had a core team of people who I thought could contribute and help steer what we did within the mini portfolio of my own investment. And that was the team I trusted to help me get to where we needed to go. I have other people who are, it's sort of two people in charge. They have deep expertise. They really understand it. They can do the vetting of the ideas that come into their investment and make a decision on what they want to do going from there. But every investment is empowered, right? They get the money and then they do it. They've presented a vision and a sort of a execution path, a roadmap to get there. Now they need to execute against that. So I don't dictate a way in which they should work.
Okay. And so this dovetails nicely. So how do you ensure the right level of agility/speed in early stage innovation while ensuring that successful pilots can scale up and integrate into mainstream IT platforms? And who funds the post-pilot work required?
Oh, excellent. Those are good questions. I'm going to put the post-pilot and the operationalizing to the second part of this, but a lot of this oftentimes is going to be partnering, especially if it's new technology, right? And so we're really invested into ecosystems outside of BASF and how we can leverage those to help us to build the investment out. And then it's what we learn along the way that then informs the next part is operationalizing and scaling. It's different for every technology. Some will more readily scale because of their nature. 5G, I think, is a perfect example of that. It was built with intent to scale. So how we scale the technology, generally, I would say, is not the bigger problem. How we scale it into the organization is probably the bigger challenge. The funding will need to come from people who want to use the service and who want that to then be part of what they do. And so there's got to be demand for it. And throughout the lifetime of the investment, they should be working on the demand. Going back to that community aspect and the sourcing of those use cases, if they're working together with their partners to realize these use cases, these would generally be some of the first partners that they would work with in the organization to help build out then the operational offering to go there. And then we have some potential models on the operational side that can also give a little bit more incubation time after to help it kind of grow out. But ultimately, it needs to stand on its own 2 feet. And that's in part why this idea of it being an internal startup is so important, because they're building a business. They need to get that business funded after they've got their incubation money. And just like any VC, I expect my return, right? And that return is not in cash, but is that you're successful in getting it out to people.
Fair enough. So roughly how many innovations are you managing at any one time? And what's the typical staffing mix?
The portfolio is about 13, 14 right now. We kind of hold a reasonably steady number around that. Typically, that's not set in stone. It's really about the ideas that we have in front of us, and also the maturity of those investments and whether they need to exit and move on and go into the next thing. In terms of staffing, again, that's up to each of the investments, how they staff themselves, and how they want to engage with the organization. Here it gets a little bit challenging, because we're of course subjected to all the normal machinations of an operational organization, where there may be limitations on headcount and that sort of thing. So again, depending on the stage of the investment, it may be that they're sourcing partnerships and assistance from the outside world first in order to get there while we build up capability. Or it may be that we're always acquiring that particular technology from the outside world, and we just sort of put a wrapper around it to BASFify it, if you will, for lack of a better way to explain that. So staffing kind of goes a number of ways, but is again a key component that has to be well developed before it can actually get out into the operational organization.
Okay, and we've got two more, and I think we've got time for them, but we're not going to do any more after those. Oh, sorry, Jim. we had one more come in. We'll see if we can get to it. All right, so can you compare and contrast your approach with a typical stage gate approach, and what are the pros and cons?
Yeah, that's very interesting. So I think with a stage gate approach, we're a little more subject to early business case. And being able to prove out where there's a market and how that would go, and that helps to determine whether you make the investment in it. The gates themselves may be similar to how we approach review in terms of milestone you have to reach, but it's not that it's our reviews don't say you have to have achieved XYZ by this particular review. There is a small exception to that, but it's fairly minor, so I'm not even going to bring it up. So we're not trying to say that it should be to any one point before it can pass a particular gate. Rather, again, it's up to the investment leader to tell us as the Digital Innovation Board what it is that they think they will get to by a particular milestone. So by that next review, we want to look at what you've said you've done and understand whether or not you've actually reached that or not. So you're setting your own goals. Now, what might come back is that your goals were too small. You didn't really get there, or it wasn't enough, or you didn't hear some feedback that we gave you the last time because we didn't, you know, we thought you really needed to go a different direction, and that's not really being incorporated here. So those are some of maybe the ways that we can manage to control it, but we don't have to. I don't think we would win, and we wouldn't be able to stay agile enough if we based it on a gating approach, a stage gate approach.
Okay. And we just have one more, because Jim, before he jumped off, just was commenting that he thinks you should write a book about this. So last question is, how do you monitor the project progress? Do you use any particular platform or personal? You know, how do you keep track of all of it?
No, maybe this is someplace that I could get better. Maybe this is where generative AI would help me in managing all this for me. You know, look, this is my job. It's 100% my engagement into it. And And as I mentioned kind of early on, which is always a little deceptive, it's a lot about conversations and discussion. Monitoring where the budget is and what we're doing with the budget. I mean, I still use spreadsheets with controllers, and we talk about the money all the time, right? And where the money is and how we're doing it and all those good things. All the important aspects of it. We have really good management on that side of the thing, so I don't tend to worry about that. And then it's incumbent upon, again, each investment to manage their money and in a system that they want to manage it in. We are starting to try and harmonize some things where, for example, we have our reporting all standardized, so that's never a challenge, right? The leaders of the investments have to report out into these systems. And our controllers help with that. So that's, again, mostly systems around the money. We document our decisions just like you would any other committee or governing body, and we manage that. And then I track the portfolio as a whole from inception to now and understand what we've done, what we've actually accomplished or not accomplished in that amount of time. And like I said, I meet with the Digital Innovation Board, a little more than quarterly per year. So we're pretty engaged with each other on what's actually happening with the portfolio. So I know that might not be a totally satisfying answer, but I think, again, we try to really empower these investments and allow them to run with it the way they want and manage it however they want.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Brian. This has been fantastic. Everyone has enjoyed it. Getting lots of good feedback in the chat. So, and I should also mention, this is the second thought leader interview that Brian has done. So he has been happy to be in the hot seat twice now. So thank you for that.
No problem. No problem at all. And if I can add one last thought, I was just thinking back to monitoring project process. Don't forget, because of the reviews, all this comes out. Right. It's very clear to us whether you've really made progress, not only against what you've said, but just progress in general. So that's the best way is really putting the leaders at the center and saying, now you've got to tell us what you did and show us what you did so that we actually believe that you're making the progress, as an aside. But other than that, I would just say, yeah, I love doing these. I appreciate everybody listening, and I appreciate being here. So thanks for hearing me out.
No, thank you so much. This has been fascinating, and I know everyone really enjoyed it. So awesome. All right. So thank you. And thanks to everyone for joining us. And I'll send out the recording shortly. Thanks so much, Brian. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.